So this week's Sedra is Noach.
Look at Hark, H-A-A-R-P.
We're on record now, being recorded. Everything you say will be taken down and used in evidence. So we are now entering the Sedra Noach. It all happens very quickly because we have only last week was Simchas Torah, the last of the days of Sukkot, page 10. In the Feldheim publisher's Chumash, translated it into English, page 10. But just a couple of points before we actually get into the Sedra, about the fact that we've come from these heady days of Tishri, Rosh Hashanah, the in-between days, Yom Kippur, the further in-between days, Yom Kippur and Sukkot, then Sukkot itself, Shemini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, Shabbos Bereishis. These are heady days full of content, meaning, rejoicing, solemnity, repentance, prayer, you name it. It's a total and complete experience. And in fact, the previous Rebbe, even before the previous Rebbe, the month of Tishri is actually the seventh month. So the Rebbe's pointed out, I think it's much earlier than even the previous Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Rebbe, pointed out that the word Shvi in Hebrew, Chodesh HaShvi, the seventh month, the word Sheva can also be read, if you change the Shin into a Sin, you can read it Sova, which means satisfied, replete, full. So the Chodesh HaShvi is the seventh month, and it's the full month. It's like so full of Jewish experiences. And not for nothing is it called Rosh Hashanah. Just like the head of the body contains within it all the capabilities of the body. Now think of all the five senses. The five senses. Amazingly, the head has got all of them. The five senses. Sight in the head. Hearing in the head. Smell in the head. Taste in the head. Yeah. And touch. Yeah. It's true, the rest of the body has got touch, but the head's also got touch. Yeah. So the head, this relatively small part of the body, has got within it all the five senses. It's sort of a bit out of kilter, isn't it? The one small part of the body has got everything. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because the head contains the brain, and the brain is what rules the body and what controls the body in absolutely everything. Should the brain be damaged, the person is damaged totally. Whereas the reverse is not true. If somebody loses a leg, they can function as a body totally normally, except they have difficulty walking. But if the brain has been damaged, then everything is damaged. So this is why Rosh Hashanah, Tishri is called the Rosh, the head of the year. It's not called Tchilas Hashanah, the beginning of the year. It's called Rosh Hashanah. Because everything in Tishri is so full of meaning and content that it's like the head of the body. In other words, the rest of the year merely follows the month of Tishri. And here, this is a statement from the previous Rebbe. He said that you can look upon the month of Tishri in this way. It's so full of Jewish experiences that it's impossible to actually do them justice at the time we're experiencing them. It's like one thing after another. There's almost no time to recover from the previous occasion, and another occasion's arrived. Yom Kippur, and then straight away Sukkot, and then Shemini Atzeres, and Mistara, and so on. So, and then join the interim days of Sukkot as well. It's not as if we're sitting idle, twiddling our thumbs. There's Simchas Pesach She'eva, and the rejoicing, join the interim days as well. So, he explained as follows, that we take all the investment that we've made in the month of Tishri, the seventh month, the replete month, and all of that, it's as if we like unpack it as the year goes on. And he used a mashal, a parable, of a merchant who goes to the big city, to where the big fair is, like in Leipzig it used to be, the big international fair in Europe, where all the merchants used to descend there to buy their merchandise and take back to Poland and all these different places in order to sell from their warehouses and shops. So when the merchant goes to Leipzig, what does he do? He stocks up. He goes with his trainload of wagons and his wagon trade, and he goes to all the different places that he wants to buy. If he's a cloth merchant, he'll buy here, buy there. He'll load it all up on his wagons. It's all parceled up. It's all rolled up and tied up. He doesn't open everything up. When he comes home and he puts it in his storehouse, then little by little, as the year unfolds, until his next trip to Leipzig, he takes out a roll of cloth and a parcel and a this and that and a box, and he unpacks it and puts it up for sale. So the previous Rebbe said, this is the month of Tishri. It's as if we're stocking up for the whole year, with full of spiritual experience. But it's too intense to unpack it all of the time. So as time goes on, during the months and year ahead, we'll be unpacking the experiences of Tishri and utilizing the experiences.
Little by little
as time goes on. So, and what is the aim of Tishri? So the Rebbe once explained that at the end of Tishri, some do it after Simchas Torah, some do it after Shabbos Bereishis, which is last Shabbos, very close to the end of Tishri. The Gabbah, the warden in the synagogue, bangs on the bima, and he announces, V'Yaakov holach ledarko. And Yaakov went on his way. Now that is a quote from the Chumash. It appears later on, in the end of Parshas Vayetze, and just before we start reading Parshas Vayishlach, and it's telling us that Yaakov, who had brought up his family in Haran, went on his way back to the land of Israel. So the Rebbe explained that the Yaakov Holach Ladarko is telling us what is supposed to happen as a result of the month of Tishri. Because as we said, the month of Tishri, it's like a charged spiritual experience. We're living on a daily basis with God's presence in a very intense way. What are we expected to do with that? Well, as we just explained from the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, you're supposed to take those experiences and utilize them throughout the year. But the rest of the year is much more mundane. So the Rebbe explained, when we say the Yaakov Holach Ladarko, we are expressing this sentiment. Because let's analyze the word Yaakov. What is the word Yaakov? Jacob. In Hebrew it's Yaakov. But the word Yaakov is made up of two parts, Yud and Okev. Yud is the first letter of God's name. We know the four letter name of God is Yud, and then a He, and then a Vav, and then a He. We normally just say Hashem when we're not praying, and if we are praying, we use another word which means the Master, Adni. But so we don't actually utter God's name. But the spelling is Yud, and then a He, and then a Vav, and then a He. So the Yud of Yaakov stands for God. But not just God, but the first letter of God's name, which is the highest level of that name as depicting God. So Yaakov, the Yud, is talking about the highest level of godliness. And then the last part of his name, pardon?
What's the Aleph?
There's no Aleph, it's an Ayin. What is an Aleph generally?
What is that?
An Aleph also denotes God, because Aleph is one, the first letter, which denotes the number one. And the word Aleph also means, is connected with the word Aluf, which means prince, king, or master. So it's referring to Alufa Shel Olam, which means the master of the world. So the word, the letter Aleph is very significant as well. But that's another story. It's the, we're now dealing with the Yud.
In the tree, it's Aleph, Hay, Lamed, and Kof. That's the central column.
That may be. The reason is because Aleph is the one God. It refers to oneness. The one and the oneness of God. And as I said, the word Aleph itself, Aluf, means master or prince, king. So Aleph is very significant as well, but we're at the moment discussing the Yud. And then after the Yud comes the word Okev, which means heel. So what's the heel? The heel is the lowest part of man, that part of his body which is in contact with the earth. So the word Yaakov is telling us, take those lofty ideas which you acquired in the month of Tishri and go down and down and down and down through the worlds, through all the spiritual levels, till you reach the lowest level of living an ordinary material physical life in this ordinary material world. And transform it. Connect it up with the Yud. Transform that Okay, that heel, to make it into a godly place. So inject the Yud into the heel and raise the heel that it should be connected with the Yud. This is how the Rebbe explains why we announce this announcement of a Yaakov Holach Ladarko. So he explained the word Yaakov, and then he explained the word Holach. Holach means to go. What does going mean? Going has also got this idea, because if you think about it, you start off, let's say, in medieval times, the king's palace was the center of everything. Nowadays, it might be the Houses of Parliament, but whatever. Let's use the paradigm of the king's palace. So Buckingham Palace, that's the sort of center of the country. Now, the Yaakov Halach, he went. You can go from Buckingham Palace, and you can walk or drive the length and breadth of the country. You can even arrive at John O'Groats or Land's End, the very far reaches of the country, but you're still joined to the original place, to Buckingham Palace, because you can just go back along that road and get back to your source.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's all connected. Again, this brings out the idea exactly like Yaakov. You've got the central point, which is the connection with God, and then you can go far, 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 far away and still be connected, even though you're very, very far away. And that expresses the idea again with the word holach, to go, and ledarko. So this is the way the Rebbe explained the phrase, and the sentiment of it is that we are expected and we are encouraged to take with us these lofty experiences of the month of Tishri and inject it into our normal daily life and elevate our normal daily life, and they should no longer be mundane, but we can make our daily life godly as well. As the rabbi said, there's a pasuk which says, "Bechol drachecha da'ehu," you should know God in all your ways. That means that even when we're eating and when we're drinking and when we're walking and working, we can also know God. As the Maimonides says, that a Talmud Chacham, a very wise sage, who's very learned in Torah, how do you recognize his wisdom? Most people would not understand it if he started expounding on his wisdom, because he's too great and too deep. Where do you see his wisdom, says Maimonides? You see it in the way he behaves in his normal daily life. The way he walks, the way he talks, the way he eats, the way he dresses, the way he relates to people. This is very interesting. The great wisdom expresses itself in mundane things. So he could be a master of Torah and know the whole of Torah inside out, but we wouldn't be able to test him on that, because we don't know the whole Torah inside out. But where are we able to see his greatness? In the way he behaves himself in mundane things. A Talmid Chacham behaves like a wise person when he's walking, talking, eating, drinking, and sleeping.
The way he conducts himself.
The way he conducts himself. So that's B'chol Drachecha Da'ehu. Know God in all your ways, meaning take the lofty ideas which we've learned and have been inspired by and inject it into normal everyday life. And elevate that life. So now, this is all connected with the Sedra Noach. Because the Sedra Noach tells us the story of the flood.
Oh, no.
It connects us, it tells us the story of the flood. Everyone knows the story of the flood? Yes? You know the story of the flood?
No. I wanted another two.
Let me just quickly recap.
No.
After God created the world, an unfortunate event took place. The mankind discovered idol worship. This in itself needs some explanation as to how it's possible for those created by God to forget their creator. But the facts are, as they say in Yiddish, "Mafrek nishkin kashas ava maisa." You can't ask questions on a historical fact. Why it happened? What happened? It happened. Maimonides actually explains the sequence of how they fell from quite an elevated idea to a very base idea in their idol worship. He says that they started off by realizing that all the great powers in the world come from God. The great forces, the sun, the moon, the wind, the stars, the oceans, the natural minerals, everything comes from God. But they started to interpret that in a way by saying the sun is very, very powerful. And God made the sun. So someone arose and said, you know what? God wants us to honor the sun as well as him, because he made this great sun. So we must honor the sun too. So someone started off with this erroneous idea that God made great things, and those great things should be honored too. What the form of honoring the sun was, I don't know. But that led on slowly but surely to a situation whereby they gave more and more honor to God's creations, such as the sun, and began to forget about God himself. They knew at the back of their minds that God is the creator, but they're confronted every day with the great powers in nature, and they felt that in order to honor God, they should honor these powers, and gradually forgot that the connection with God, they knew in the background he's there. And it ended up that they worshipped these powers in their own right. That's how Maimonides explains it. So that was one contributory factor. And of course, idol worship makes God very angry, and rightly so, because it means they're denying God's involvement, ultimately. And that means they're no longer serving God himself. They're only serving his created beings. Then other things started taking place. Once people lose their moral guiding light, then they fall into other immoral levels of types of behavior. So they began to steal. They began to act violently. They began to act immorally in terms of relationships. And so man descended lower and lower and lower in moral standing, to the extent that God decided that they had lost their right to exist. And he decided to purify the world again and start it all afresh. And this was done by announcing to Noah in Hebrew, who was a tzaddik. The debate is on as to whether he was a relative tzaddik or an absolute tzaddik. We won't go into that now, but Rashi brings it. But he was certainly a tzaddik, at the very least, compared to the other people in his generation. And God saw him as the savior of mankind. Noah had three sons. They all had wives, so there were eight people altogether. Noah, three sons and their wives.
Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Murray and I, we went to a shear actually last night, Shandy Wilhelm at Mrs. Levy's, you know, ladies' shear. We always go on Tuesday night. And Shandy was actually talking about this subject last night to us. Although you're talking, she was explaining about Noah and the ark and everything, even to how it was built.
Yeah.
The ground floor.
Well, the Sedra gives all these details.
Yeah, and then we have the first floor, and then she said the top floor was for living, the bottom, the middle was for the animals, the bottom was for all the supplies, all the food, everything. It actually
happened. And the waste.
Yeah, she actually explained how this ark was built and how it was set up. was very interesting. Yeah. How it actually was all put together and how the whole thing was actually set up.
And interestingly, the nautical engineers have noted that the dimensions of the ark are actually, amazingly, the most stable, the most stable combination of measurements that you get, you need for a stable ship.
But the way it was put together, and the way it was
together,
and the way they planned it, and this floor and that floor, and the way everything was planned, and how it was constructed and built on the level, it was very, very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's all in the center. But what I want to focus on is the whole concept of the flood and the ark, or teva in Hebrew. That teva means a box or an ark. And the whole idea behind it and what we can learn from it, which also connects up with what we started off talking about, which is the month of Tishri. So let's analyze for a moment, what is this flood? So the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, that is actually a misnomer, because he didn't actually live in the town of Lubavitch after he became Rebbe, but he was the start of the Lubavitch dynasty. His son lived in the town of Lubavitch. He lived in two other towns called Liozhna and Liadi. So he writes about the spiritual significance of the flood. And he explains as follows. It's based on a text in the Song of Songs that says as follows. Mayim rabim la yuchlu lechabais es ha'ava. Mighty waters will not be able to extinguish the love, nor great rivers swamp it. It's in the Song of Songs. So the question is, what are these mighty waters? And what love is it that they cannot quench or swamp? Whose love for whom? So Hasidic teachings explain that this is referring to the love which a Jew has for God. The Jew has a Jewish soul which is part of God. And that means that deep down within each and every one of us, there's a part of God. And that means we have an innate love for God too. Because we feel our attachment to God. However, we are living in a physical world, which is a maelstrom of human experiences, which threaten to swamp the love that the Jew has for God. When a person thinks of all the challenges in their life, we have to have a job. That takes us away from learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, going to shul. We have to go to shul. We have to learn Torah. We have to do the mitzvahs, but there isn't so much time. In previous generations, where there was less prosperity, people worked all the hours of the day. They would get up at 6 in the morning and work till 12 at night and drop exhausted into bed and rarely have time to go to shul and learn anything at all. There were Jews who lived in the middle of forests as woodmen, as wood choppers and so on, and never participating in communal Jewish life, and maybe only went to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur through no fault of their own. So the life that we live in this world is like a flood. It's like a torrential downpour, a torrential flow of water that threatens to swamp us and carry us away and prevent us from doing anything to keep our attachment to God. So this pasuk says that these mighty waters, the worries of making a living, and all the things we have to do to live, will not quench that love. There's a promise that the Jewish soul will win out and will always express itself and will always assert itself and we can never be totally swamped out of existence. So not only that, the question then can be asked, why on earth did God put us into that situation? If the Jewish soul living in a Jewish body is so challenged by all the challenges of physical and material life, and it threatens and certainly reduces our ability to connect ourselves with God, why has God put us in that situation? Why didn't he make it much easier and put us in a world where food is freely available, housing is freely available, clothing is freely available, and we'll have spare time, the whole day we'll spend learning Torah.
Maybe to appreciate it.
That is for sure, that when you're not, don't get things too easy, you appreciate it.
If you have everything on a plate all the time, it's very nice, it's lovely, but at the same token you don't appreciate things.
You've hit upon a very important idea.
What I find in my life, I mean, it's lovely to have everything on a plate, it's beautiful, but at the end of the day, people that have that, they don't appreciate anything because they've always got it. Whereas
absolutely
if you work
right
for it,
or you've hit upon
it, you appreciate it.
A key idea which is brought in Hasidic teaching.
I find that in my own experience. That's what I find.
You're absolutely right, and this is the answer, part of the answer to the question that I asked, is why did God create this whole situation? So he wanted us to earn our achievements in a way that it won't be given to us on a plate. So now the question is, if these mighty waters are so powerful, meaning the worries of life and the challenges of life, is it not going to end up that we're going to be negatively affected by them, and that we'll be worse off than if we didn't have them at all? The answer is in the story of the flood. God told Noah to make an ark. The ark was not a propelled ship. It had no propeller. It had no engine. It had no sails. It just went where the water took it.
Yeah, just floated.
Like it floated. So this is a key point about the ark. It floated. So in other words, the ark started off on the ground. Within a short space of time, after the rain caused the flood to begin, the ark started rising slowly off the ground. As more and more flood waters came, the ark rises higher and higher and higher, till it says Vatora Mateva Be'al Horetz. The ark rose high, from the word rum, above the earth. So these mighty waters are paradoxically the cause of the ark containing all the humans in it rising above to a higher level than before. And the word teva also means word. So the Baal Shem Tov said, Bo la teva. Noah was told, go into the ark. You can read that, go into the word of Torah and the word of prayer. So by living in this world, full of its challenges, we not only overcome them, but we rise to a higher level, to one that we could not have reached had we not been living in this world.
So basically, as everything was handed to you on a plate all the time, it's you wouldn't bother
linked
to do anything.
To your point. Linked to your point.
You wouldn't bother
absolutely
to do anything.
Yes.
The purpose that things are, you have to go for something, or you've got a goal and you strive to do that goal, but at the end of it, it's quite a nice feeling. Everything's handed to you.
More than a nice feeling, there's a great reward at the end of all of this. So this is the link with Tishri. Tishri is also this idea, take the lofty ideas and dive into normal life and elevate it. And this ark, which is the word of Torah and the word of Tefillah, is also telling us the same lesson, to dive into prayer, dive into learning Torah, and thereby rise above the mighty waters to reach a level that we would not have been able to reach had we not actually entered this existence.
There's actually room to stand inside somehow.